afternoon. Thanks for coming back and listening so soon. Bringing the stories of everyday folks while you sit back, relax, have a whisk, coach. Here we go with the Trend Speak podcast, bringing you insight or bringing a laugh. Here's the man who might have a plan. Give it up for your host, Trent Podskaland.
Good morning, everyone. I'm sure you can hear it in my voice, but gosh, I am so groggy this morning. I stayed up late last night. I had my final week of rookie leagues for curling, and then I got recruited to play in the league after that as well. So I did 4 hours of curling last night. The plan had been to podcast last night. Well, after 4 hours of curling, I got home late, needed to eat still. Then I decided it was a good idea to watch two of the three episodes of The Boys that is out on Amazon Prime right now. And so I was up until sometime after midnight, knowing that I was going to have to get up early, knowing my alarm goes off at 5:30 in the morning. Snoozed it for a little bit, and here I am sitting in front of the computer recording as I rub my eye because I'm just so groggy this morning. I have no idea why. Great weekend, though. It was a weekend well spent. Friday night, I went to the second best concert that I have ever been to in my life, and that was the AJR concert at a local amphitheater, which I had never been to an amphitheater before, but those are pretty cool. They're set up very nice. And absolutely none of this has to do with today's guest or today's episode. Just fun facts that I thought I'd pop in and share. This is what you get at 7:15 in the morning from me, Trent. Well, without further ado, and to shorten the length of this episode in any way that I can, I'm already 2.5 minutes in. I'm going to dive right into our guest for this week and introduce you to Debbie. Talk to you next week, everyone.
I'm sitting here with Debbie this week, who's joining me on the podcast. Debbie, welcome into the Trent Speaks podcast.
Hi, Trent. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. I was just telling Debbie, this should be an interesting recording because I got kicked out of my office so that my wife could work out. Now I have the dogs in the bedroom with me. So I'm in a whole different environment. So we'll just roll with it and see what background noises we get. And I'm on a much tinier desk. I'm a lot more cramped than usual. I actually don't even have room for my notebook. It's right on my lap. So
But what an appropriate thing when you think about it, because your wife kicked you out so that she could exercise. And I mean, I help people balance their relationship with exercise because I think so many people have exercise shame. I do wonder what kind of wrath would you have undergone if your wife didn't get to do her workout today? And that would just be something we'd explore under the umbrella of body relationship coaching. So I feel like it all worked out. It's very serendipitous.
Yeah. You know, now that you mentioned that, it is very like coincidental or ironic, I suppose, that would happen today of all days in this moment of all moments.
Of course. I mean, maybe it's just, you know, the podcast gods are just doing you a favor or something.
Well, Debbie, I always like to just dive right in. Talk to me about what it is that has gotten you to where you are today. Talk to me about what you do.
So I'm a body relationship coach. I help women. I help anyone, but predominantly women, teens, and tweens make peace with their body and build up their immunity to diet culture. I was raised by a mom who has an eating disorder. I was put on my first diet at the age of 6. And so at a very young age, I was really sort of taught that there are good bodies and there are bad bodies. And if you have a bad body, you should be doing the following things to turn it into a good body. So that I ended up with my own eating disorder. Fortunately, I was sort of able to go, I went and saw an eating disorder therapist and especially therapist and an eating disorder specialist dietitian. So I got rid of those behaviors, but I still hated my body. And it took me years of, I went so far as to become a personal trainer, where I was like, this will be fine. People will just pay me to exercise and be thin. And it took that for me to realize, oh, wow, everybody feels the same way. It's not really size discriminatory. I had women of all shapes and sizes, you know, coming to me asking me to fix their bodies. And I kept thinking, well, when are they going to notice that my body doesn't look right? And so that's when I sort of had this realization of, oh, feeling like your body isn't good enough and feeling like you need to fix it doesn't necessarily have to be a symptom of your body not being good enough and needing to fix it. It can be a symptom of something bigger. And so now I help women make peace with their bodies because it doesn't seem to be size discriminatory. No matter what size you are, you're worried that it's the wrong size or that it's distributed in the wrong way. Or if it isn't, you better not lose it because that's where your value is. And I help women tap into their value beyond their body because, you know, there's all this diet culture, really toxic messaging out there sort of disguised as health. And you've got a whole world of people just thinking that they're doing self-care wrong. So that in a nutshell is what a body relationship coach does. That's what I do is I help you sort of identify your anxiety and fears around your body and learn how to cope with them.
Yeah. And it's very interesting. You know, there's a couple of things I just took away from that. One of the first things I had written down was, you know, I talk a lot about mental health. And I think because one of the things I first started talking about was sharing my story and my journey with mental health when I started the podcast about 2.5, 3 years ago now. And I feel like there's almost a parallel there. You know, I feel like a lot of people when they're going through mental health, they're like, you know, it's only me who thinks this, or I'm the only one feeling this way. And you don't realize other people are too until you start to talk about it and learn more. And it almost sounds like it's the same in terms of how we are with our bodies. Like we feel like we're the only ones with those feelings, but it's not just us. Like it's a very prevalent thing.
Yeah. I mean, I help mostly women, although I will say doesn't matter what gender you are, feeling like your body isn't acceptable is this sort of universal theme that's covered in diet culture. It's got different expectations for different, you know, there are these different expectations put on different types of bodies. And yet there's always sort of this rule of what it should look like. And I always sort of, you know, I think the thing that's hard about diet culture is so much of it is sort of disguised as health and wellness. But so much of what diet culture is just focused around food and exercise. And when we start to really think what is health, it's more than food. It's more than physical activity. It's mental well-being. And so much of what diet culture teaches is almost sort of taking care of the physical at the expense of the mental, right? Like your wife is doing exercise right now. And I think that's fantastic. And I'm pro exercise and I teach exercise and movement and all of that. And how many times have you heard someone apologize for they didn't get to the gym enough this week? They were just too busy at work. Or, they went for a run, but they didn't run as hard as they normally do, or they didn't run as long as they normally do. And the mental anguish that they take on for being a not good enough person, for not taking enough care, when the truth is that your body doesn't discriminate against the movement. It's just grateful for the movement. And your mind is at that point, the part that's suffering from the anxiety, from the stress of not doing enough or not being good enough. And so I think that when you limit health to what diet culture sort of maps it out to be, which is what you eat, how you eat it, and how you exercise and move, it's at the expense of the bigger picture of health. And unfortunately, it's causing most of us to not only feel like we're failing, but to lack the tools to actually care for ourselves in the way that that best serves us.
And so how have you seen the media play a role in the perspective of diet culture? Because one of the first things I think about is, you know, you have all these models on front covers and stuff who are all these like skinny women and everything. And I think that at least from some of the things I've seen, there has been a little bit of a shift lately. And of course we are nowhere near to where we should be, but no. How have you seen media play that role?
Well, and it's interesting. So media has definitely played a role. I think that There's the obvious stuff, like the obvious stuff that you're talking about, which is the, there has been a shift for more diverse bodies, in ads and the like. I think that what's really, I'm appreciative of the distance that it's come. And yet I want to point out that even the plus size models that you're starting to see in some of these ads, are still on the thin side of a bigger body, right? So there's still this very narrow window of what people's bodies look like. And we have culturally attached a moral judgment on someone for their looks, because we associate looks with health and how they prioritize their health. And it really sort of negates the fact that there is an entire world of different types of bodies out there, and that health can look so many different ways. It's really changed, I think, with social media. Of course, there's all of the filters, and it really sort of changes. It's really changed our expectation. In fact, I've seen articles about how people are starting to request, plastic surgery that resembles a Snapchat filter instead of an actual human being. I think that where it's less obvious than the obvious filters or the ads like you're talking about is how in pretty much every single movie, every cartoon I've ever seen or my kids have watched, the good characters always conventionally beautiful, and the bad characters usually fat and made fun of for that. That's one of their sort of like dopey characteristics. I think it's in, I think we have size discrimination in like bathroom stalls or movie theater seats, all of these things that sort of reinforce that, like, hey, this is what a normal body should look like. And if it doesn't fit in this, this is that person's fault and that person's problem. So while I think that some of the stuff like the ads and like the models have gotten a little bit more diverse, I would agree with you in that there's a really long way to go. And I think what we need to start doing is recognizing that body diversity, we culturally diversity in general has been really sort of, for the most part, I think there's been a push towards it, but I think that fat phobia is still very much socially accepted. You are allowed to remind a fat person that they are fat, and you are allowed to tell a fat person why they shouldn't be fat, the dangers of being fat, all of which are actually not scientifically backed, but culturally accepted. I can't imagine walking up to someone and, I know people do, but I can't imagine walking up to someone and commenting on their race or ethnicity and saying, here's why you're wrong. But you're allowed to do that to people in a fat body. And that's a problem. The fact that that's a culturally acceptable thing and that we're able to do it again in the name of wellness. I can see so many unwell things about that. But it really does sort of reinforce that there is a correct way to have a body. So my hope is that as social media sort of expands everything and we start having access to more, as much as there are all these new filters and everything being added in, we're also able to access the more diverse visuals that there are out there, right? Because there are so many different people out there. We now have access to more of them. You've got to look for them, and you've got to physically do your best to like put them into your social feed, but they're out there and you can find them.
So I know we've talked a little bit about, it's almost like people have this feeling that there is a correct way, or like my body looks like this, but I want it to look like this, or it should look like this. Everyone has that different perspective. How do you start to shift that focus? How do you work with people to start to shift that mindset and shift that focus then of moving forward and saying, no, like it's, you can be happy however you want to be. And it's not just you that are having these thoughts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do this and I do coaching both one-on-one, and I have a private membership community, and we really explore, the diet culture mythology, where it originates, where we buy into it, where we play into it that we don't even know. And I think what I help you do is identify, I tend to start around food only because I think food is something everybody needs. And yet we all have these rules around food. And we all assume that our rules are the correct ones or the only rules, not even realizing that they're just ours. So I'll help you sort of identify where your rules around food have originated and learn how to get curious about them. I think the good food, bad food concept is so interesting. And I always, you know, it's very good food. If good food, bad food, changes as culturally we move into new fads. So when I first started dieting back at the age of six, that was the era. It was in the 80s. It was in the 80s, 90s, and it was the era of the low fat diet. So I was really into carbs. I was really into fruit. I was really into all of those things because those things were all low fat. Obviously, we've seen a shift nowadays. Carbs are bad. Nobody can see me doing air quotes, but carbs, they're not bad. I just want to be really, really clear to anybody listening. Carbs are not bad. You need them to live. But there's now all of a sudden been this cultural shift of carbs are bad. Protein and fat is where it's at. And so I still hold on to some of my fears and anxieties as much as I know that they don't need to be there. I still hold on to some of my fears and anxieties around foods that have been culturally accepted now. And so we have to sort of question if we hear a, oh, I shouldn't have this, this is bad for me, question it. Why shouldn't I have it? What makes me think it's bad for me? Do I feel sick after I eat it? Because if I do, that could be a real reason. But if the only reason is that it's bad is because it's got too much sugar, sugar totally, like sugar's fun and sugar's fine. And if I'm celebrating, sugar might be the way I want to do it. There's so many reasons to eat that don't just have to do with nutrition. That again, when we sort of expand the definition of health, we do get all that stuff. We get food is a way to connect. Food is a way to share. Food is a way to love. Food is a way to celebrate. Food is a way to calm yourself. There's so many different ways that all of a sudden, you know, it really helps us sort of identify, oh, wow, I've been locked into this sort of truth and holding myself back with my rules. What happens if I can expand them or learn to challenge my rules? And so we do that bit by bit. We do that through food. We do that through exercise. I think the way you relate to your body is the way you relate to the world. So, as I work with people, you know, we always start out with the simple stuff of like, well, you know, I'm afraid that if I eat this, it's going to do this, or I'm going to get this, or da 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 da. But you know, I've seen the coaching sort of spill out into these bigger concepts of how we show up in the world. You know, relationships with partners or relationships with spirituality, all of this, because I think it is how we relate to ourselves. We want to have that openness. And then the other thing that I always sort of say is, this is the hardest thing, but diet culture really teaches us that if you don't like something about yourself, you should fix it. And what I teach is you don't have to always like yourself to love yourself. And then I compare it to my husband because I think he's fantastic and he's sexy. And sometimes he even cooks. He's great. And sometimes he bugs the shit out of me. Like he's great. And like, sometimes he's the last person in the world. I just please go away. I don't want to hear your voice. I don't want to see your face. I need a few minutes. And that doesn't mean that he's bad. That doesn't even mean that our relationship is bad. It just means like, you don't have to like everything about your body for your body to be okay. And so diet culture really, again, teaches if you don't like it, fix it. And I'm here to say, you don't have to fix it. What if we just make a space for the fact that you don't like something about yourself, and not liking something about yourself doesn't mean you are not okay or likable or valuable or worthy.
I really like that you don't have to fix it. And I think that's what a lot of people first go to. It's like you said, like, no, this is wrong and this needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
And so I like that you're shifting that mindset and having them look at it differently. And have you found that to be helpful for those people that they're able to at least start to shift that mindset a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I'm watching I'm watching my women flourish. They're doing incredible. And I think nobody's ever given us permission to not like everything about ourselves. You know, even the body positivity movement, which theoretically I'm totally behind. Everybody should love their body, except for even the body positivity movement sort of has this concept of like, I like it no matter what. And I think that, you know, even if I had what was societally accepted as a perfect body, I'm still allowed to be frustrated if my legs get tired or if I sunburn too easily. Like there's so many little things, right? That you're allowed to have all the different flavors and colors and feelings around a body part. And so I think that, you know, where I'm watching my women 60, I think of all the time cumulatively as a community that we've wasted trying to fix our bodies. And if nothing else, it's sort of, I'm watching these women's, this their time just open up like, oh, I don't have to fix that. I don't like it, but I don't have to fix it. I can go out with a friend or I can write this book I've been wanting to write or do any of the millions of things that are more fun than agonizing over changing your body. It's amazing to see when you open it up to, you don't have to like it for it to be okay. It's even been amazing to see how these women have been able to see the beauty in each other and lift each other up and cheer each other on. And it's pretty incredible when you're given permission to not like everything about yourself, what can happen. So I always sort of lean towards, rather than body positivity, I really like to preach what I call body neutrality, which is you don't have to like it for it to be okay. So there's no one way to have a body.
And we've talked about this change, this growth. And so I'm curious, how have you seen things change and grow maybe in like the last 5 years? And where do you predict that things are going with diet culture and body image and everything? And I'm going to say the next 5 years, but just like, where do you see it going in the future? Man. You're going to have to give me 5 years.
Yeah, no. So I think COVID was a blow for the movement. I think that, you know, COVID locked most of us in our homes and most people's bodies are not the same as they were before COVID, myself included. And I don't actually think that that's a bad thing. I think it makes a lot of sense when there's a, you know, pandemic worldwide, stress and all of this sort of stuff. But again, we've equated weight gain and body changing as a negative thing culturally. So, right now, eating disorders are on the rise. You know, my daughter, she just turned 7, but as young as 5, she was coming home from school saying that so-and-so's mom says that this can make you fat or that can make you fat or that you have to do this much stuff. So, it's pretty toxic right now. If you're looking for health at every size, diverse, body neutral environment, it's out there. But right now, I think because people are starting to pull out of this, you know, COVID mindset and they're re-entering the world and are sort of afraid of what their bodies will say about them that they don't want them to say. I think diet culture right now is stronger than ever. My hope is that in just talking to communities, and I mean, that's part of the reason I was excited to come on here is just this, before I knew that there was, you know, an anti-diet culture movement out there, before I knew that you could be a fat activist, I was involved in diet culture, right? So my goal is to hopefully spread the word. And if you hear something that you're interested in, feel free to send me a message. This is my favorite thing to talk about. And my hope is that we can change the conversation, but I don't think diet culture's going anywhere. I'm raising 2 kids, 5 and 7, and my plan is to give them the skill set to build up their immunity to diet culture. I'm not setting them up for a world without diet culture. I don't actually think that's going to happen in my lifetime. I'm not even confident it'll happen in my kids' lifetime, but I do want to start having a culture that has tools to talk back to the negativity, as opposed to just sort of get caught up in the current.
As you were talking, that was my first thought too, is that, you know, I also don't think that I'll see it in this lifetime, and that it's almost going to take a couple generations at the least to start to turn over and to have that conversation. I think that like you mentioned, like you can continue to push that conversation forward. And that's really we can do as much as we can do right now, but it's going to take some of that turnover, because you have those parents who are saying different things still, mm-hmm. and kind of implanting that. And so it's just going to take a lot of that education piece, that change and that mindset as well. But it's nice to know that you're helping to push the conversation forward.
Thank you. And on that note, what I have, and I know we talked about this, but I have, if you're wondering where you fall in the diet culture world, I think the thing is that even these parents who, you know, who have said things to my daughter's friends or whatever, some of them I'm friends with, and they wouldn't consider themselves diet culture at all. I think that so much of this is just a culturally accepted thing, that we say things not even knowing that it's diet culture. In fact, I have caught myself saying things, even with what I do, I've caught myself, saying things that I'm like, oh, actually that's a diet culture. Okay. I take that back. Right. But it is so everywhere. We're so drowning in it. Nobody gets out of the diet culture pool without getting a little bit wet. So if you're wondering, if you're like, what is diet culture? I wonder if I have a diet culture thought. I've sent an assessment so you can kind of check this out and say, I have a lot of diet culture thoughts. Or maybe you're like, oh, it's not so bad. I only have one or two. I will tell you that for all the things that you see on the assessment, I have thought every single one of them. So I want to put like no shame in having any of these thoughts. I think these thoughts are really, really normal. Again, I think we're taught to feel this way and to think this way. My job is to help you identify it so that you're no longer at the mercy of these thoughts. But I want to be really clear, no shame in having these thoughts. I have these thoughts all the time. I still have residual nightmares from my eating disorder days where, it's funny, I don't have them very often anymore, but I still have nightmares where I'm out to dinner and all of a sudden I realize I've been on a diet, but like I'm being bad at the restaurant. And then like the rest of the dream is just a binge. I don't even relate that way to food anymore, but there's definitely still, you know, a good food, bad food mentality that lives on in my psyche and sometimes likes to show up when I'm sleeping. So no shame. These things are here because we've been taught to have them. What we do with those thoughts is what we want to change, right? As opposed to just reacting to them and trying to change, fix the body. We want to learn how to talk back. We want to learn how to question where these thoughts come from. We want to learn to challenge some of them. So oftentimes people are like, well, you look great. Like, I don't think you're fat. I just want to lose 5 more pounds. Why do we have a different, let's get curious about that. Why is it different for us? Because I pretty much know everybody I know is comfortable, at least to a degree, with other people's bodies being not perfect, but they're not comfortable with their own. Let's get really curious about it. We're taught not to be comfortable with that, but why is it that we're comfortable with it for other people? So again, just sort of normal thoughts to have, but really opening up the conversation around those thoughts about where is this thought coming from? How is this thought serving me? And how is this thought not serving me? And if it's not serving me, what can I do to turn it into something productive instead?
I wasn't going to ask this question quite yet, but I feel like it fits best here. What is it that you've learned about yourself along the way?
Oh, wow. I think the biggest thing, that's a really good question. I think the biggest thing that I have learned about myself is that everything I feel about myself is fluid. So I will have days where I feel incredible and striking and gorgeous and powerful. And it will be followed by days that I feel less than and small and unattractive. And that, I think the biggest thing I've learned is that the feelings are just feelings. They're not actual truth. That like, I have released a little bit of the grasp my ego has on my thoughts. The truth is that feeling good doesn't mean you are good, just like feeling bad doesn't mean you are bad. Right. And so I think that sort of is probably the biggest thing I've learned, is to take all my opinions with a grain of salt, because like, who am I? Right. Which is like it's so funny, but it's so weird how that sort of like, that awareness that like, I'm just another person also gives me the freedom to be an incredible person within there, as opposed to I have to fit into this fine box of what an incredible person looks like. I think that did that answer your question? I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it did. It did. All right, okay. I'll talk long enough for you. We'll take a sip there. I will let everyone know that Debbie talked about the self-assessment, and then I will also throw the website for the self-assessment and the overall website within the episode notes. But even though I'm doing that, of course, I want to be able to have you speak. How can people learn more if they're interested?
So you can check me and my website out. I'm at bodyrelationship.com. On Instagram, I'm actually really, really active there. I'm at bodyrelationship_coach. And I work with people who have eating disorders, but I also work with people who have disordered eating. And then this is where I like to throw this statistic out, is that, you know, 1 in 4 diets statistically will turn into an eating disorder, but then 4 in 4 diets are disordered eating. So you don't have to look a certain way. I think eating disorders are one of those weird diseases that you're like, oh, mine's not bad enough because I'm not thin enough, or because I'm not sick enough, or because I'm not this enough, right? You can be a fat person and have an eating disorder. This is not a post for fat people. This is not a post for thin people. This is a post for anyone who's living in diet culture. And that's all of us. So yeah, you can find me. My website is bodyrelationship.com. You can check me out also on Instagram, and I am Debbie Seraphim. You can email me. It's my name, debbieseraphim@gmail.com. So many ways to get in touch. This is my favorite thing to talk about, the entire world. So please, I respond to messages. If you don't hear from me, send me another message, because I probably just didn't get it. It went to my spam. I respond to messages. I've got an Instagram community going on. We do regular meal support, where another eating disorder survivor, also named Debbie, and I get together every week and eat food and talk about how uncomfortable it is to eat food in front of other people. We've got some pretty cool stuff going on. So, yes, you can find me in lots of places. Just don't be afraid to reach out. I will respond.
Debbie, that leads me to our last question. It's always my favorite question. And so whether it's something you've talked about today, or maybe it's something you didn't chat about, but what do you want people to take away when they listen to this podcast?
Oh, good one. These are good questions, Trent. It's like you do this for...
I come prepared.
Yeah, you do. You come prepared. I think if you take only one thing away from this, it's that there is no one way to have a body. If you think that, well, that's true for most people, but, and then you fill in because most people aren't as big as I am, or most people are, it's just not true. The truth is thin is not healthy, and fat is not unhealthy. You can find your health at any size. And so the big takeaway is, feeling bad about your body is not a symptom of your body being bad, even when you think it is, right? And the body image has nothing to do with the way your body looks. It just doesn't. And I think if you take nothing else from our conversation here, it should be that, right? That you feeling that way isn't because of the way you look. Even if you think, well, but she hasn't seen me, it's still not because of the way you look. It's not, because you don't have to like yourself to love yourself. Yeah.
I like that. Thank you, Debbie. Thanks for coming on the podcast. One thing that I love to do to make every episode its own, I let my guest do the sign off. So you are more than welcome to sign us off and take us out. Yeah, I keep throwing all the surprises at you, even though.
Yeah, no, I feel like now I'm not like, I should have prepared a joke or something. no, but this was really fun. And I guess I'm just going to say, if you feel are you ready? Here's my big sign off. If you feel bad about yourself, remember that all feelings, even the good ones, pass. So challenge yourself. There is power in sitting in your discomfort and knowing that your discomfort is not truth. It's just a feeling. So there you go. I'm gonna end sounding philosophically wise and deep and all that stuff. And then, you know, maybe, you know, yeah, that's fun. Yeah. But let's quit while I'm ahead.